Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us for the transformational giving. Are you truly maximizing your opportunity and potential for success? I'm Bridget Murphy, and I'm a principal with GP Catholic Services. I've been doing fundraising for quite a long time. Started my career actually with a big campaign in the early 90s with the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, and at the time, it was, I think, the second $100 million campaign. Now that seems to be more the norm, but truly forged my career in fundraising and had a great experience doing that. Subsequently spent a lot of my career both as an internal VP of development, mostly in healthcare. So I've seen it from both sides now and feel that gives me even a better perspective on what you're trying to do. And currently, as you're here, you will hear, working with some Catholic organizations that GP Catholic Services is really privileged to be working with. So I want to ask my counterpart to come up and introduce himself as well, and then we'll go through the presentation. Please feel free to interrupt us and ask questions. We have questions at the end in case there's time as well to kind of get you thinking about transformational giving as well. So, Dan?
We're tied to the microphones because the sessions are all recorded. I'm going to give that to you. My name is Dan Conway. I have been in this field since 1979. I was 4 years old when I started. I've kind of done it all when it comes to stewardship and development for the church. I started out working at St. Meinrad Archabbey and Seminary in the development office. Then I worked for three archdioceses, Louisville, Kentucky, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Chicago, Illinois. Then I worked for a couple of different national consulting firms and worked with dioceses all over the country. The last and best firm that I worked with was Graham Pelton's GP Catholic Services, which is the division of Graham Pelton that focuses exclusively on the Catholic Church. I'm no longer full-time with GP Catholic Services, but they pull me out of retirement periodically and prop me up, and here I am. And we want to share with you some of our Graham Pelton's and GP Catholic's insights into transformational giving. Now, let's start with a definition of terms here. We talk about different levels of giving. We talk about annual gifts and major gifts, leadership gifts, principal gifts. Transformational gifts is a little different. It's not necessarily tied to the amount, but it has more to do with how the gift changes the donor and or the organization. The greatest example of transformational giving is given to us in sacred scripture when our Lord talks about the widow's mite. The publican made a major gift, gave a lot of money, but it came, Jesus said, from his surplus, whereas the poor widow gave everything she had. And obviously that was a transformational gift for her, because it changed her. It was a stewardship gift, really, a gift of everything. And transformational gifts are like that. They're change agents, both for the donor and for the institution. My first encounter with the notion of transformational giving came many years ago when I was on the development staff at St. Meinrad. Our board chair at the time was Father Paul Reinert, a Jesuit, former president of St. Louis University. Brian knows of him. Former, and at the time he was the chancellor, and he told the story of the senior August Busch of Anheuser-Busch, who hated fundraising and wanted absolutely nothing to do with giving until he was persuaded by St. Louis University to make scholarship gifts for poor students. He started giving reluctantly because he didn't like it. But the more he gave, the more the giving affected him. And in the process, he became a changed man. So it was a transformational gift for him. It was transformational for St. Louis University because they finally had some resources where they could help students who otherwise couldn't afford to be, attend the university. And so the university changed from an elite institution in St. Louis to one that was really open to students of all economic circumstances, many of them poor, many of them black. And that's what transformational giving is all about, is the impact that the gift has on both the donor and the institution. So as we go through this presentation, we're going to be talking about lots of things that are blocking and tackling, the nuts and bolts of best practices of professional fundraising. But our perspective is looking for the gift that will change the donor and at the same time change the organization. Okay?
Okay. First, the shameless commercial for GP Catholic. Just so you know, I'm one of many people working within Graham Pelton and GP Catholic, but my colleague Bob Happy, who I think was listed as one of the co-presenters, has much more extensive experience than I do, but I think the headline here is that there's a lot of familiarity and experience and success within the Catholic Church. We only have people with experience that work with us, so that's another piece of the of GP Catholic, and we really do customize our approach. To Dan's point, we are going to talk about best practices, but we're able to pivot and do things that fit the unique culture or aspects of your organization, and we always want it to be uplifting. That's the joy of being in fundraising. We use a lot of AI tools. That's in my 35 years doing this, I think that to me has been the biggest game changer. It's not the end all be all, but boy, is it helpful to be able to screen your donor base and find things out about them, about their capacity or their inclination that that you wouldn't know otherwise. And we like to think that when we work with our clients, we're partnering so that there's knowledge passed through that enables you to maybe finish a project or an initiative without us and then potentially have the ability to do it without the partnership. So just a shameless commercial, and we'll go from there. So, Dan, you were going to talk about the transformation on this slide, which I wanted him to have a visual for it.
I've been corrected. I get into the subject too soon. Okay. Transformational giving, changing the donor, okay? What kind of gift changes the donor? Think about that for a minute. There's a great example in English literature that we're all familiar with and we hear over and over again at Christmas time. That's Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol and the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, who has an incredible transformation from being a self-centered, miserly old Scrooge to becoming an extremely generous donor. And there's a wonderful scene after Scrooge has had the experience with the ghosts and all that stuff, and the fundraisers who had originally asked him for a gift and he told them, you know, send them to the workhouse, send the poor to the workhouse. They come up and he sees them on the street and he whispers in their ear an amount of a pledge and they stammer and stutter. And Scrooge says to the fundraisers, thank you, 1,000 times. It's the donor who's grateful because she or he has had the opportunity to make a gift that changes their life and their perspective. So that's what we're looking at. we are also looking at that from the context of the spirituality of stewardship. When the American bishops published their pastoral letter, Stewardship, a Disciple's Response, in 1992, and by the way, if you haven't read that document, it now goes to the top of your must-read list, because it really goes to the heart of transformational giving. The bishops say that stewardship requires conversion. You know, you can't be a good steward of your time, your talent, or your treasure as long as you're turned in on yourself, as long as you're self-centered. Stewardship requires conversion. The pastoral letter, the bishops say that a Christian steward is one who gives gratefully, accountably, responsibly, generously, giving back to the Lord with increase. And a stewardship diocese or a stewardship parish or school really needs to be characterized by those four same principles: gratitude, accountability, generosity, and the willingness to give back to God with increase. That is how a stewardship perspective changes the way we identify, cultivate, solicit, and steward transformational gifts. Genuine gratitude to the donor, expressed as often and as appropriately as possible. Transparency and accountability. In the session this morning, Bishop Talley in Memphis talked about the commitment to transparency with the donors. Generosity. We must be a church that shares generously with the poor, with those who are in need. We're not holding back, but we're giving generously as a parish, as a diocese, as a school. And then lastly, we steward the gifts in a way that demonstrates our care and concern both for the donor and for the gifts that have been given. And that's all part of the transparency process.
One of the things, having gone to conferences many, many, many years, that I found helpful when I went back to my organization was coming back with firepower. And for those of you who haven't seen Giving USA, which comes out every year in June, we run to it every year at GP Catholic and Graham Pelton to see what's happening out there. What are we learning? What are the trends? And it changes every year for those of you who've looked at it. But I want to share these things with you before we get into the case studies, because the number one thing is that this should give you a lot of confidence and maybe leverage to go back to your organization with some doubters or some people who are hesitant or unsure about whether it's the right time or if you're positioned to start talking about transformational gifts within your organization. So what's the key insights that we've seen? It's still all about individuals. Always has been. I think that will be the way it will continue. And it's even more so when we look at 2023. Religion is still number one. That's changing for those that you have looked at the stats, but it's still the number one area of giving. People are getting more sophisticated about their giving. We're going to talk a little bit more about that and what that means for you in terms of trying to secure those transformational gifts. And even in times of uncertainty, there were all predictions of a recession before 2023. The giving went up, and Americans generally are very generous even in times of economic uncertainty. So what happened? Well, it went over $557 billion for the first time. So it was an increase. However, some would say that there was a little bit of a fluctuation when you take into account inflation. But when you see the pie chart, you know, you really see that it's really all about individuals. And fortunately for, I would say, for religion and for the Catholic Church, you know, that's where your most obviously continued opportunity is. So it grew, reaching a new height. It still has not yet surpassed all-time inflation-adjusted that was set in 2021, but it remains above the pre-pandemic level even when adjusted for inflation. What drove it? you know, the experts say that was the stock market did well, and that always continues to be something to look at when you're thinking about large gifts. So good, that's good news. As I said, where is it going? Well, it grew in 9 categories. The strongest was in grant-making organizations, which is, we think, people giving to their own family foundations and also to donor-advised funds, which I'm going to talk about. So that has seen a big uptick, and also public society benefit organizations and those donor-advised funds have been super, super popular. So here it is. Religion is 24% of all giving in 2023, but it's declining. So I feel like this is good news, bad news for all of us, and especially those working in religious fundraising. Before the pandemic, it was 30%. There was a nominal increase from 22 to 23, but slightly decreasing when adjusted for inflation. But it's still something that people feel very, very strongly about. And Dan said it so eloquently a few minutes ago. So there's still individuals who are increasing their giving. So this should give you some confidence if you're thinking of doing more in transformational giving. So it's still a priority in times of challenge. It's the only measured cause area with lower donation levels in 2023 than 2019. So it's, you know, again, a mixed bag. Peaked in 2016, and it's just been on a downward trend. So it's 24%, and it was 60% 40 years ago. So just, it's the facts, it's the reality, can't change it, this is what's happening. So what's happening? You may have heard this or seen it, but I just, you know, did a little Googling as well. And I have, you know, 2 daughters who are probably identifying less with a certain religion, and that's just happening across the board. Dollars are up, but the number of donors is going down, okay? Wealthy donors are giving a smaller share to religion, not great news, compared to middle-income donors. So, again, that's just something to have your eye on when you're thinking about your programs and your strategies. So even in this report, as I said, it's a little good news, bad news. I think there's mostly some good news when you think about transformational gifts, and that is, number one, there's still this great wealth transfer about to happen with the aging baby boomers. So there's a lot of money. $11.8 trillion is expected to transfer to nonprofits, and that's about 14% of the total expected transfer of wealth. Bequests, not huge uptick, but uptick. So this is the, you know, spoiler alert, plan giving. That's where transformational giving, that's really where it's at. And that's what we're seeing, which we're going to talk about a little bit with some case studies. And these donor-advised funds, right? So if you're not marketing to them, you might have individuals who have them, and they're just may or may not be thinking about using one to give to you. But definitely have that in your literature. Have that in all your marketing materials, because they're a thing, and they're not going anywhere. And a lot of people are, a lot of donors are using them. It's part of that sophistication that we're seeing. And when people are doing it, age 44 is roughly the average age, and then making a planned gift at age 53. So it's not your older donors, but I think you've got to be, and I've talked to a lot of people here at this conference and in general about the number of 80 and 90-year-old donors and prospects that you have. So you need to be talking about planned giving. Our takeaway, Dan and I, is you got to strike while the iron is hot. This report is going to change again next year. So take that and like I feel that the clock is ticking. We feel the clock is ticking. So, every day that goes by that you're probably not talking about major gifts and planned gifts is another day that's gone by. I think I talked to a diocese a couple months ago and asked about the attrition rate, and it was 2,000 households a year. A staggering number, right, of households declining. So, again, you got to use this information to your advantage and see that there's just an unprecedented opportunity to harness the potential of major and planned gifts, right, within your organizations. What can you do? Well, if you're not in a campaign, you should be thinking about one of some level, whether it's a mini campaign or a diocesan-wide or a parish campaign. But in my experience doing this as long as I have, if the picture isn't big and the need isn't big, then those gifts will not come. That's just the plain and simple fact. So What's your case for support, and how can you make it as urgent and inspiring and compelling as possible? If you can't do a wide campaign, at least talk about an intensive major gift and plan giving campaign. If you don't have a formal plan giving program, you need to develop one. You need to market strategically to your DAFs and donors with DAFs. Always be promoting bequests and beneficiary designations, retirement plans, those IRA rollovers. Perfect. Give people sample language. You know, it doesn't have to be fancy, but in every piece of literature you have, I would be suggesting how to put your church or your diocese in their estate plan. And maybe create a recognition opportunity for them if you don't. Schools are doing it. Hospitals are doing it. The church needs to do it too. Make them know they're special if they've told you, you're in their estate plan. So I'm just going to pause and now launch into a few case studies. So one is a very recent diocesan, client that we worked with, over a period of time, even through COVID, so kind of this is compressed. But their initial goal was to develop a foundation. They didn't have one. They had a great case for support. You see that here, endowment for Catholic education, social ministry, priestly formation, retired clergy, startup costs for the foundation. They did a study. They asked clergy and lay leaders across the diocese about how the idea of a foundation sounded. Would they volunteer for it? Would they give to it, and ask for their advice on proceeding forward with it. So before asking, it's always helpful to get input and advice for those of you who haven't done sort of a study process before. The findings were really encouraging. People were pleased with the spiritual life in their parishes across the diocese. They were supportive of the plan to establish a foundation, and there were very positive indications. So there was a lot of confidence to move forward with this. Almost around the same time, the head of the diocese fundraising did his own benchmarking study of 30 CEOs across the country, got sample materials as well, and shared the success that these our dioceses were experiencing. So the foundation was created, and they housed all the funds at a local community foundation, so they didn't have to deal with all that infrastructure themselves. A half-a-day retreat was conducted to align thinking and position the diocese and the foundation to start asking for gifts. It was really productive. It provided a plan for the Catholic Diocese Foundation to move forward. And then the work began, because there is homework to do. Infrastructure, bylaws, job descriptions, foundation board members, great way to engage lay leaders. Top prospect visits were scheduled. The board member candidate list was completed. Case statement finalized, a logo, and the ask started to happen, right? So they painted the big picture, did the hard work behind the scenes to get things ready to receive the gifts, and then started asking. So the bishop was involved in the solicitation meeting with the foundation's executive director, continued recruitment of board members, and voila, first gift, $500,000. Talk about a game changer. Probably one of the largest gifts they had received in a long, long time, if not ever. A full communications plan for the rollout, messaging was done, and then continued research. And what GP Catholic did was provide more in-depth prospect research profiles to give the bishop and the executive director more confidence about going ahead with soliciting top prospects. So we were able to uncover more information about capacity than they had ever realized on their own. And the other piece was a comprehensive plan giving plan, which we provided for them to implement, kind of the soup to nuts on how to do it and what would be needed. And this basically included four things: educating the staff and the clergy around how to talk about plan gifts, really important, making sure they understood the basics, coaching, setting up the infrastructure. You know, you got to have the vehicle, you got to have the wherewithal to accept these gifts, have policies to accept them and understand what needs to happen in the ins and out, and then how to market and communicate that through your website, email, mailings, receptions. So it, you know, this can be a simple plan or a more elaborate plan, but we would suggest that you need these four things in order to develop a good plan giving plan for your organization. So as of now, the foundation has received more than $23 million in pledges and planned gift indications that were not known until those conversations started to happen. One at $10 million, one at $5 million, and then there's a number of five- and six-figure gifts that make up the balance. So it's really case for support. The setting up of the foundation drove it. I don't think it necessarily has to be that you either have or don't have a foundation, but you've got to set the stage for these large gifts and then start having those conversations with people about outright gifts and planned gift intentions. Yes. It's really the bishop and the executive director are doing this. Maybe the vicar general too. Yeah. Oh, the question was who's involved in the asking of these gifts? And the answer is the bishop and the executive director. And I think in some situations, the vicar general, and they're starting to involve those lay members of that foundation board as well. So this is ongoing as we speak. Yes. You know, I think there was a budget for stewardship and advancement already. They just converted it into the foundation. But as I said earlier, part of the case was the startup costs of the foundation as well. So they're asking these donors, these transformational donors, to help fund the continuation and sustainability and growth of that foundation. Okay. So two case studies of parishes where we changed the names to protect their privacy. So this was a parish, this was within the last year, 2,000 registered families, had a school and the church, so some of the prospects we spoke to in the study were only affiliated with the school, some with the church, and some with both. 1,000 active donors, a $2 million annual offertory, and then the case for support was pretty significant. It was a $39 million master plan for a massive rehaul of the campus, including the school, and a total redo of the sanctuary. So we decided to present the whole enchilada, not break it into two phases, so that those individuals could understand what the overarching vision was. Right? It's important. We had a lot of really good indications in the study results, a lot of robust preliminary gift indications. So as a result, we did decide to recommend breaking it out into phases with the initial goal of $12.5 million. When we did the data analytics, we found a lot of untapped capacity, $22 million. Now, does that mean you're going to raise $22 million? No. But we found capacity that they didn't know they had within their parish base. As of right now, the pastor has really been involved in all the asks. 90% so far has been raised so far of the funds raised to date. So a $3.5 million gift was received, and I want to pause on this because during the study, the individuals who ended up committing this did not indicate anything close to that, but they saw that the plan was for $39 million. When they came into some money, great wealth transfer, they decided to put $3.5 million towards that campaign. So never would have happened unless that case for support was presented initially in the study. They wouldn't have dreamed of making a commitment like that. Yes? So this campaign is ongoing right now. So it's probably about a year plus in.
Okay, so how long is it?
Probably another couple years. 3 to 5. Yeah, 3 to 5 years. So this was about how long is the campaign? About 3 years. Redemption is 3 to 5 years for the pledges. But they're also, we always counsel taking planned gift commitments and recognizing those depending on the age of the donor as well, right? So I think that's important, to keep in mind. So the lead gift, phase is currently in process and they've raised, over $8 million. So they haven't reached target yet, but they're well on their way with a small number of donors making these 6- and 7-figure commitments towards their goal. The key has been to focus on that part. So they haven't really opened up to the public phase or the wider phase yet. And, we are not of council right now, but they're continuing on their own. Again, as I said, we kind of taught them how to ride the bike. So now they're riding the bike without us. So another parish study, this is ongoing right now, a little different, about 1,200 registered families, half are active donors, $2.3 million annual offertory. So they had started raising money kind of pre and during COVID for a new church. Their church is too small. They're growing. So they conducted it via mostly mail. Again, it was COVID. Couldn't do the in-person visits. Very challenging. But they persevered and raised about $3.5 million. And they have pledge fulfillment that was completed this year. So they were primed to go to the next level and continue to raise money for this new church. So GP Catholic went in. We were retained to go in, and we called it pressure testing. So we went back to individuals who'd made gifts, completed making their pledges, and started talking to them about making gifts to then get to the finish line and raise the amount, which is another $6.5 million. All went really well. No one seemed tired or said, I already gave, or it's, you know, not my time to do it. So they're moving ahead very initially. This is still in the first few phases, but the results is what we wanted to share because they're so positive. Again, data analytics surfaced $16 million. They'd never done this before. So this was helpful, gave them a lot of confidence. The donors to date have pledged 100% more than in the recently completed efforts. So far there's over $3.5 million raised, and the pastor is extremely involved once again, and even he's going to be going on a sabbatical, which we were a little concerned about, but the deacons are stepping in to work on this, which is great. So I'll just pause and just wanted to bring it back to sort of what does this mean for all of you if you think about, well, gee, how could we do that? What could we do? You need that case for support. I don't know what that is, but I think each of you could in your own mind say, what would really energize folks? Endowment, capital, program, what is it? You have to fill in the blank on that. I think endowment is becoming obviously more and more appealing, especially if you're older donors who want to think about a legacy gift and being able to transform even when they're not with us anymore. You need those leaders, though. You know, you need to engage your lay and some clergy. Pastor participation we see is continuing to be so critical. And use data analytics. If you're not using screening, you don't have the wherewithal. If you hire a firm, they typically will do that for you and show you those results so that you can see it. And, you know, it needs to be done in phases. The lead major gift effort is the most important part of any major campaign, any major effort. And the focus on that, and not, what I say, lowering the floor for as long as possible, is critical. Challenge match gifts, hugely effective. And you just got to have that infrastructure investments, the question about salary and budget. You know, we all know this. You got to spend money to raise money. The ROI on fundraising, there's just no comparison. So if you don't have stats on the ROI or the cost to raise a dollar and you need to share those with individuals, do so, because there's just nothing better. So I'm going to turn it over to Dan, unless there are any questions about that compelling case for support.
Any questions up to this point about anything we've talked about? It's very hot in here.
I'm going to open the door. It was freezing when we
Yeah, when we walked in, it was freezing. I even went up to my room to get my coat. By the time I got back down, it was too hot to wear the coat. Okay. Case for support. Real simple. I like to talk about the four I's. Number one, inform, okay? Informing the members of your parish, your diocese about who you are, what your mission is, what your goals are, what your priorities are. Having done a strategic plan first helps. You can also do the strategic plan afterwards. But information is number one. Then secondly, involvement or engagement, but involvement for the eye, right? The more you get people involved in the life of your parish, in the life of the diocese, the more the information takes root and they become part of it, as they are by their baptismal responsibility as missionary disciples. The third eye is inspiration, right? We need to set people's hearts on fire. If you want to know how to do that, talk to the Bishop of Memphis. He knows how to stir up people's hearts, right? And good pastors do that. And if you don't have a pastor who is particularly inspirational, find opportunities. Bring in speakers. Get in lay leaders. But inform, involve, inspire, and then the last I is, what do you think? Inform, involve, inspire, invite, right? Invite. Because people won't give unless you ask them, right? So if you're beginning to get ready to put together your case for support, keep those four elements in mind. I can do it too.
There we go.
Wow. Thank you. All right, so you start with a mission-centered opening, right? This is about mission. Everything that we do in the church is about the mission that has been given to us by our Lord to go out and make disciples of all nations. So the case for support needs to emphasize the parish or the diocese's central mission, which is rooted in faith, in community service, in spiritual growth. And in that process, the inspiration appeals to the shared values of potential donors, reminding them of the timeless principles that characterize who we are as a vibrant Catholic community. The case for support should also talk about, the impact on people, right? How our parish makes a difference in the lives of people, which is extremely important, in their spiritual lives, in their sense of belonging to a community, in some cases in their education and faith formation. In the outreach to the poor. Highlight the impact on people. Share personal stories, testimonials, examples that illustrate the tangible difference that the church makes in our lives. Emphasize that the church's work extends beyond the religious, the internal spiritual guidance, to the education, to charity, to social justice. We have both an internal impact on people's lives, and then an outreach that makes a difference. That should be emphasized in your case for support. Align the case with the core Catholic social teaching. Catholic social teaching has been called the best kept secret in the church, right? We don't emphasize enough the rich tradition of Catholic social teaching, which starts with the dignity of the human person, that every person is made in the image and likeness of God. So the case for support should reference key principles of Catholic social teaching: care for the poor, stewardship of creation, the importance of community. This adds depth to your appeal and shows alignment with the broader values of our Catholic faith. Focus on the broader community impact. Pope Francis is telling us over and over again that the church should not be self-referential. We shouldn't be focused on ourselves, but be focused outward on the impact that we make. The church the community in which your parish or diocese is located is enriched by the presence and the vitality and the vibrancy of your parish or your diocese. So stress the church's role in community development, education, social services, making it relevant to those who may not necessarily be engaged actively in the parish or the diocese, but who are smart enough to see the difference that's being made in their community. And that's a way of bringing people back into the fold. No, I'm not. I'm stuck. Probably something I did. Okay, then when you've done all of that, then the details, right? The specific projects and needs. Those are important. You can't leave them out. People want to know where their gift is going. And if they're going to make a transformational gift, they want to see that this is going to make a big difference. So you've got to be specific about what your needs are and how what the funds will support. Create a sense of urgency. It's important to give now. Why now? Because the need now is greater than ever. The spiritual need, the hunger of the heart that the church addresses. And we all know this from involvement in our culture today, that loneliness, alienation, emptiness is on the rise. There's a great urgency here to bring the gospel message to people both within the parish and outside the parish, both within the diocese and throughout the region that the diocese is so located in. So whether it's an immediate need or a time-sensitive project or a response to the growing needs, incorporate a spiritual appeal, okay? We believe in the spirituality of stewardship, and make sure that the case for support is not a dry nuts and bolts listing of give to us because we need the money. No, give to us because you need to give. Give to us because we are making a transformational difference in the community that we serve. Give to us because now is the time to proclaim the gospel with a sense of zeal and immediacy. Questions, comments at this point about anything that we've said? We have time. Okay, so we want to ask you some questions now, since you don't have any for us. Okay. What are you doing to secure transformational gifts? Anybody? Yes, sir. No?
Zero.
Zero you're doing, okay. All right, that's something important to think about. Yes. Okay.
I would just say that we started with the Finance Council really thinking about having a planned gift program, how we can invite parishioners or even educate them on planned giving. And so we started that with just some stewardship campaigns. Actually, it's because of coming to these conferences the last 3 years that I've been doing like campaigns in the bulletin, on wills, estate planning, things like that. But we'd like to move. We just formed a subcommittee of our Finance Council to concentrate specifically on planned gifts. Right. And then one of our Finance Council members is going to help us with a strategic plan.
Good.
And so we're going through that now. I mean, our parish needs so much, and I don't, you know, want to, We really do need that support. We have, our buildings are falling apart. We have tons of deferred maintenance, blah, blah, blah. And so I think many parishes are in that same situation. So
what you're describing is mainly the first die, right? You're informing people.
We're informing.
Both about the need and about the vehicles, the way that planned giving can respond to the need. You need to move, and your plan will do this. To the involvement, to the inspiration, to the invitation, right?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
We backed it all the way up and actually created a strategic plan for the diocese. We hadn't have one in 20 years or more. Manchester, New Hampshire. So we then boiled that down to a lot of salient points and created a marketing campaign around that and put that out through our communications vehicles and engaged the pastors in the process. And just being able to have parishioners see that we do have a mission and vision and we see where we want to be in 20 years, I think we may be on to some of the next steps. So.
We created a brochure basically emphasizing a case, a very specific case for the parish, and then we host legacy seminars to explain how the process goes.
Is there an inspirational component to the legacy seminars?
That's a good
point. Once again, just,
probably not. Just
giving,
hopefully love of,
yeah, if you're just
love of the
organization. Information, that's
mm-hmm.
important.
Yes.
But it's not enough.
It's not all the way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good.
Thank you.
Sure. What else? Yes, sir. Matthew?
I would say in Cincinnati, I know a lot of our organizations working in small shops and offices, but we've been able to make a jump and make that investment, that return on investment, right, and getting development officers or just investing in those relationships, right? And finding right now the small ways to inform, inspire, involve, right? Laying that groundwork, that I think is going to be critical to the transformational opportunities we have coming down the pipeline that are still a couple years out for us, but, building up, can we have 200 families, right? That we're ready to go to and we built those relationships with. That's where we're at right now.
There's a donor cycle of major gifts that I share sometimes about how long does it take? I mean, the school of fundraising would say it could be 18 months. So the sooner you start having just a relationship without the ask, but just getting to know them, talking to them about needs more generally, the better you're going to be positioned when you go for the ask, for sure. Yep.
Yes, sir. Giving me my exercise.
Actually, it was quick to say zero in terms of transformational, because that's not terminology that, so I'm glad I'm in this session. But we have started an initiative in our diocese. I work for a parish, but our diocese has taken the initiative and the lead on creating a series of talks and webinars using local lay professionals around not only will and estate planning, but end-of-life decisions.
Oh, great.
Everything around what the Catholic Church teaches about those hard decisions. Yeah. And the long-term goal is it'll be set up in segments where then parishes can put it on their websites, and then the entirety of our diocese now can have visibility to will and estate planning and the yeah. like. I mean, we just received $750,000 in our parish, you know, through will and bequest that we weren't expecting. We had no knowledge of it. But this kind of opens our eyes to, you know, how can we get our arms wrapped around that possibility of what's even out there.
I would market the heck out of that, yeah. by the way. That's that gift, because fundraising can be a thing where it's like the bandwagon effect. And I think the more you profile, if you can profile who that donor was, you know, when I received planned gifts, I would always go to the executor or the family and say, could we profile, you know, your mom or your husband, because we want to inspire others. And I think when people see that it's someone like them, that they can do it too, it has that effect. So I think the more you can do that, the better. You'll see that people, oh, I never thought I could do that. I'm going to call my estate lawyer and update my will. Simple as that.
Yeah, one thing we started doing in St. Louis last year is we do our early campaign advance mailing in February, and we went to maybe 20 or 30 of our top donors and said, you know, normally this time you would get your letter from Archbishop Brzezinski. We would love to come out and just have a conversation with you if you're willing. And maybe half or a little bit less took us up on that offer. But we have really amazing conversations. I think in some cases it felt like we moved the relationship forward easily 2 to 3 years just by having those conversations, yeah. making the ask, and then stop talking and let them talk. And you just learn so much more about them and understand what's important to them and what you're doing well, what you could do better. And so that was very, very fruitful for us. Yeah. So.
Was the Archbishop involved in any of those?
Not in those specific meetings, no. Brian Niebuhr and I did that ourselves, but he is very involved in our development with donors. We had an event last week at his house for some of our council members and other volunteers. So he's very involved, and he's willing to make asks for us, but not in that particular case.
We have some other questions up here. What are your strengths? What are your untapped opportunities? What are your obstacles? Do you have any strengths, opportunities, or obstacles?
I think one of the biggest obstacles is, I've heard it from many people, I think one of the biggest obstacles is the pastor, you know, wanting to ask for money. He perceives it as asking for money. Mm-hmm. And so I know I've heard that many times here from other people. So I think that's a big obstacle.
Yeah. Some.
The conversion of stewardship is something that pastors have to have too. and sometimes when you have a pastor who's reluctant, a reluctant steward, if there is a group in the parish, a group of lay people who can encourage him and share with him their own stewardship stories, it can make a difference. Pastors have been known to change, to open up, but it doesn't come by focusing on the money. It comes by focusing on the spirituality of what it means to be a Christian steward. So, other questions, obstacles, opportunities? Then the last question, probably the most important one, what can you do when you return from this conference to get the ball rolling and be an agent of change and transformation?
I mean, I would just say when I was in your seat and I would leave, as I said earlier, and I would come back, it was an opportunity for me to have a conversation with the leadership of whatever organization I worked at. And I would say, wouldn't it, if you could wave your magic wand and have enough money or enough revenue to do X, what would that feel like? What would you do with it? Sort of to Dan's point, rather than talking about the asking and the mechanics, which scares you know, a lot of leaders don't want to put they don't want to stick their neck out, right? They don't want to take that chance. No one likes to be rejected. No one likes to fail. We know all that. But I think it's more helping them imagine what that future state could be like and then going back and saying, I heard all this at the ICSC conference. I saw XYZ presentations. I can share this slide deck with any of you. I don't know if they provide that afterwards, but if you take my card or give me your card, I'll promise I'll send this to you. I think sometimes showing individuals back at home what you heard, what you saw, that people are seeing results, you heard some of the stories, that can be enough to sort of say, and, oh, I saw these statistics where giving religion's going down and the donors are decreasing, so let's do it. Let's start it. You know, that could be enough.
Yeah, one last example of transformation, the University of Notre Dame started out as a small Catholic college in northern Indiana with a great football team. And through the vision of Father Ted Hesburgh, his vision was to make Notre Dame the greatest Catholic university in the United States, or maybe in the world. You can debate whether he achieved that objective, but he certainly achieved a remarkable transformation of that small Catholic college into a great Catholic university. And Father Hesburgh always said, you can raise a lot more money for one big idea than for lots of little ideas. Mm-hmm. You might think about, as you leave here, what is the one big thing that would really transform our diocese, our parish, our school? Would it be If all of those Catholics who are not coming to Mass anymore on Sunday came back, what would that mean for the parish, for the Sunday collection, for the vibrancy of the parish? That's a big idea, getting everybody back who's left us. Or a diocese might say, if only we could grow our parishes instead of watching them decline and get to the point where they have to be consolidated or closed. If we had an amazing growth experience in this diocese, what kind of difference would that make? With one big idea, you can move down the road towards transformational giving, both for individuals and for your organization.
One more.
Yes.
I'll make this shorter than it was, but our bishop really took a stand on this back in 2019, and he made two goals for our parish, our diocese, sorry, and all the priests are on board with this, well, as much as they do, but, you know, sometimes they need a little coaxing, but Bishop has been very in front with them. By the year 2025, he wanted 1,000 missionary disciples, and those people were to go out and bring two people each back to the church or to the church, whether they were, had gone away or whether they were brand new converts. And we had these entrust retreats they put together that are 3 days. And in 2023, we had already achieved that goal. And by 2025, goal two was to have at least 30 men in seminary at all times and be ordaining 3 to 5 priests a year because of the priest shortage. We are at 25 going into this fall. And we've got till next year to reach our 30. He instilled this propedeutic year. I probably mispronounced that. But the first year the guys want to be in seminary, they live in community at a house together and learn what it means to be a priest before they make that final decision to go into seminary. Now he's got a new goal. By 2027, he wants every single church full every Sunday. Oh. I don't know how he's doing that yet. I haven't heard anything on it yet, the details, but he has announced that that's his next goal. So having your bishop kind of stem these and really put those out there, it gets the priests a little bit more on board too, because it's coming from above. And he knows Bishop is involved and engaged in this and very, very, making this happen. He's not going to stop talking about it, and he's going to keep going.
Wonderful.
God bless Bishop Ricken. Yeah, that's what's called a wildly important goal, a wig. Okay? And if you have a wig, there's a way. Okay? transformational giving, makes it possible for really big things to happen.
All right. Well, thank you all.
We're all at time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Don't forget to do the evaluations, and Bridget gets an A+.
Oh, stop. Thank you, Dan. The best partner.